Speak, O Lord, your servants heareth. Amen. Please be seated. Well, this is one of those days. Another parable is thrown at us. And unfortunately, this parable is maybe the worst of all the parables Jesus gave his message in parables, and he used parables, little short stories, to get his message across. And uniformly, for 2,000 years, commentators, Bible scholars, and preachers have done everything they could to avoid reading this particular parable. And I'm going to join them so I can add a few years to the 2,000. But I know that if I don't say something, you're going to be puzzled about this passage. I'm going to give a very brief explanation of it, because it doesn't sound like God, does it? I mean, this God is full of vengeance and rage, and it's, if you read between the lines, you can see that he's really interested, not so much in inviting people to the banquet, but in filling the hall to make it look good for everybody else. He doesn't care who's there as long as it looks good, and it looks like it's that everybody wants to be a part of it, and his son is so beloved, none of which is true. So the king actually burns down the town of the villages of the people who said, I don't want to go to his kid's wedding. It's a waste of time. The guy's a jerk. So this king burns down the town, kills the people who had originally been invited, and invites new people. And I saw your faces when I asked, does this sound like the God you know? And you said, no. So is it? No. This passage is about the kind of kings that people had to live with. And during this time, it was the Herods. Herod father and Herod son and then the sons and cousins. This is not an example of what God does. God does exactly the opposite. The person, as a matter of fact, one commentator I read said that he thinks that the person at the end who didn't have a robe and was cast into outer darkness was symbolic of Jesus. Because Jesus, he never has the right robes for the kind of kings that he's dealing with. And so this is an example of what the world does to people like Jesus and those who follow. Okay, that was the short sermon. Now here's the real sermon. This is the book of Exodus. And this story is an incredibly important story in the life of the Jewish people, but also in our lives as well. This is, you know, that Moses leads the people of Israel. They're basically slaves in Egypt. They have to build the cities of Egypt so Egypt can expand its empire, and they're using slave labor to do it. And so Moses is enraged by this, and he, under the leadership of God, he leads the people out of Egypt across the Red Sea and into the Promised Land. Well, the problem is the Promised Land had people in it. There were a lot of people. There was a whole various civilizations in this land. And so they were going into what can only be called hostile territory. Now, you know the story. Moses gets called up to the top of Mount Sinai, and there he has a tete-a-tete with God. And he comes down and brings the tablets that have the Ten Commandments on them and goes back up for more instructions. Well, now Moses gets so engaged with God that he must forget that the people are sitting down at the base of the mountain waiting for him to come back, because they don't have any leadership. They don't know even who they are. They're a ragtag bunch of former slaves of different tribes, and they're banking on surviving because Moses is able to pull this off so far, and now he's gone. He's been gone for 30 days. Is he ever going to come back? We don't know. This is terrifying, and the people are really scared. Now, what I found interesting in preparing this and reading through the commentaries on Exodus is a weird thing. All the commentators pretend, they just don't notice that these people, these Israelites, are in enemy held territory and their lives are in danger. They don't have an army. They've never had an army. They don't have basic training. They don't have any way to protect themselves, and they're in a land of warrior tribes that see these Israelites come in and they start to attack them. And how on earth are people going to survive in this wilderness where they're being attacked by more powerful armies than they could ever possibly imagine? So they go to Aaron. Aaron is Moses' brother, and so they figure Aaron is next in command. Aaron, do something. What should Aaron do? He's not Moses. Moses is up there in the heavens or on the top of the mountain, and he does what all he knows what to do, and that is bring God here. How do we do that? We make an, I don't want to say an idol because it's not quite what it technically was, but we make an image of God that will protect us against these powers all around us. So Aaron says, okay, all the women, take all your gold from your ears and around your necklaces and all, whatever you have that's precious of gold or silver, bring it to me. And they do. They melt it down, and what do? They build a calf. It's a calf, but it's really the calf of a bull. Now, why did Aaron build? This is Moses' brother, right? He's the leadership. He leads the priests. All the line of Jewish Israelite priests are going to come from Aaron. So Aaron knows something. Why does he build a sculpture? Why would he build a sculpture of a bull, of a calf, of a young bull? Because that is the god of the Philistines and Canaanites. The god was called Baal, or if you remember Sunday school days, they probably said Baal. And the god wasn't just any ordinary god. He was a military god. The Baalim were the gods that guaranteed you victory in battle. The people that we're talking about were rapacious. They lived for war. They lived for conquest. They lived for murder. They lived for rape. They lived for gathering as much wealth from other people as they possibly could. And who symbolizes their power? The bull, the calf. This is Baal. This is Baal. Why does Aaron build a calf, sculpt a calf out of the precious metals that all the people have? He does it for the same reason that the people ask Aaron to do something. That is, they're afraid. They're insecure. Moses isn't here. If Moses isn't here, who else isn't here? God. If Moses isn't here, God isn't here, because Moses bears God's presence wherever he goes. And with Moses up on top of the mountain, that means God isn't here. And it's terrifying to be in a world without God. It's terrifying because you know you can't defend yourselves. And so Aaron does all that he knows how to do, and that is to build a god, to create a god out of precious metal, and enable that to stand in the center, and then everybody will come the next day after it's cooled down, and they can get close to it, and they bring precious items, and they sacrifice animals, and they have a great party. Without Moses, the presence of God can't be felt. And so they rely upon the force, the power, the cruelty of a pagan god. And this becomes, for a brief time, their identity. The identity of the people of God is Baal. The identity of the people of God is wrapped up with murder and torture and robbery. And it must make, you know, the way the story, it's kind of cute the way the story is. God sort of looks down and says, oh, Moses, we've been talking too long. Get down there. They're doing crazy things. They're turning my people into a rapacious, evil people. Stop them. So Moses goes down, and you know the rest of the story. But what's going on is that in the absence, in the felt absence of God, people have to do something. They need a god. They need a god to somehow give them an identity and organize their spiritual lives. They need to know that they are not alone in the universe. And so they do what the German philosopher Ludwig Feuerbach said. They created a god in their own image. Feuerbach in the 19th century said that if there was no god, that they're just some heavenly screen up there against, on which we project all our desires, our hopes, our fears, and we project ourselves onto this, onto the skies, and say that's what God is. So instead of saying, as Genesis does, that humankind is made in God's image, Feuerbach is telling us God is made in our image. And what matters is our desires, our pleasures, our hopes, our dreams, they become theologized. They become God for us. That's what's going on in the book of Exodus. The people create a God out of their own desires, out of their own fears, out of their own hopes. The problem is, you know, when you create a God in your own image, and the God is just a projection of your own hopes and dreams and fears and sorrows, can that God do anything? No. Can't do anything. It can just sit there. Gods we make in our own image have no power. Gods we make in our own image are, in a sense, kind of circular. They don't have a future. There's no possibility of them doing anything to aid you. The dominant mode of the people of Israel at this moment is insecurity, fear of being defeated and killed by the people who really are the people of Baal. In a way, when they build this Baal, they put it up on a plinth, on a pedestal, and this God is, imagine in our time, it's a tank. It's not a calf. It's a tank. Or maybe a nuclear missile launcher. It's a symbol of our power. It's a symbol of our fear. It's a symbol of our demanding that the other people around us fear us. This symbol, this Baal, or this tank, or these rocket launchers, enable us to say to everybody around us, look out for me. Look out for me. Don't meddle with me. God, made in their image, now becomes a bellicose, blustery force that supposedly will protect them. As a little aside, have you ever wondered, have you ever noticed that if you go to this old Soviet Union or to today's Russia, or if you go to North Korea, or if you go to China, do you know what they all have that we don't have? Military parades. Did you ever notice that? We don't have military parades. We've had some in our time. We have small little events. But when you think, you go back to the Cold War, what happened on May Day in the Soviet Union? Remember that? It was on television. They would always show it, some on the news. All of the forces of the Soviet Union would go marching down the main drag into Red Square, and the leaders of the Communist Party would stand there and look with approving eye upon them, and they would have all the tanks they had. They would have all the missile launchers they'd have. They'd have all the soldiers that they have, and they would send a message to the world, don't mess with us. Same thing in China, same thing in North Korea. In America, when we have military parades, they're from soldiers, airmen, sailors, Coast Guard, coming home. When we do the parades, we don't put out tanks. We don't demand that people pay attention to our power. We're glad the war is over. And if anybody's to be celebrated, it's the men and women who gave their lives, or were willing to give their lives. It's very different understanding from what we get from Aaron needing to put up a God that would protect the people. People are scared without Moses. They don't know what to do. Because without Moses, there is no God. If you have animals at home, you know that every time you go out, they get anxious. Children. Parents go out for the night. Children get anxious. Are they going to come back? Who's going to take care of me? This is what's going on with the people of Israel. They're scared. They're anxious. What's going to happen? Are we so different from the Israelites who are scared? I don't think so. The one thing we have is the assurance of God's presence. And the assurance of God's presence is lived out every week when we come to this table. This is the symbol and the reality of the presence of God. And we participate in it bodily when we take bread and wine. This represents to us where's the veil? Where's the bull? Where's the calf? Where's the tank? None of those things exist. The presence of God is not dependent upon the powers that we would might give a God that we on the skies that we would project. More than that, as Luther said, we are all Christ's to each other. We are Christ's, Luther says, to each other. We bear the presence of God in us when we are with one another. So whenever we are together, the presence of God is here because we are bearing the presence of God in our own being with one another. We don't need to create a God in our image when we have one another as the presence of God. Thanks be to God.